The show is live and local. It's your connection to local performances. I'm Kevin Kelly, and on the show today, we have live in our studio two East Nashville musicians who recently nominated for a Grammy Award. They are Eric Brace and Peter Cooper, and they're here in town to perform tonight on a house concert in Champaign. We'll give you details for how to get to that house concert, well, or at least how to reserve to get to that house concert, and they can give you the rest from there, but looking forward to having them live with us. And then towards the end of the hour, I'll be talking with the director of Concerto Urbano, which is an early music ensemble at the University of Illinois School of Music, directed by Charlotte Maddox-Murch, who is a fine harpsichordist, as well as the person focusing on early music here at the university, and that'll be coming up later on in the hour. It's live and local. I hope you'll stay with us.
Fire on the mountain, smoke in my eye, look up and see the red flames in the black night.
It's called Missoula Tonight by Eric Brace and Peter Cooper from their CD called Master Sessions with Lloyd Green and Mike Aldridge and on Red Beat Records. And they are going to be performing in Champaign tonight at a house concert that they call themselves actually the Sandwich Life House Concerts, the home of Ernie Blackwelder and Cynthia Vogel. We had them on our show not long ago talking about this. It was a new thing to me. And the deal is that there's a potluck dinner. They provide some food, some drinks, and welcome donations. And you contact them, let them know that you're interested in participating. You pay them the money, and then they tell you where the house is.
That's right.
And they've had quite a variety of people over the last few years, including now Eric Brace and Peter Cooper, who were recently nominated for, and I'm not sure I realized until moments ago that you didn't win a Grammy.
We're Grammy losing artists.
Yeah.
Congratulations. People want to come out to the Sandwich Life show. They have the opportunity to see
point at us and
yeah,
laugh. And
yeah, we're Grammy losing artists right here in Champaign.
Can I laugh now?
yes. Well, only on the inside, Kevin.
Yeah,
we laugh so that we do not cry.
That's right. Oh, it was devastating for us to have to go out into L.A. in February in the sunshine and all that, and go to all the fabulous parties, and we didn't
even
get a Grammy for it. So it's been really hard for us, and I hope people will appear tonight with a lot of sympathy. And just understanding for the plight of us.
So they should reserve for this concert out of pity.
Yes.
In other words, for no other reason at all.
The same way I got a prom date in high school is the way that I want to get people out to the show tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Is that really true?
Look at him. Of course it was true. Do you have pictures? Do you have a picture of prom?
No.
Supposedly, there's a picture of me in like a powder blue rented tux, but my mother hasn't dug it up.
That was just from our last gig, I think.
Actually, I do. You know, this is.
Come on, fess up.
This is a very sore subject.
Come on, Kevin.
You brought this up now, and I had
and we're not going to let it go.
No, I had a tux one year that I just thought was beautiful, and the official color was peach.
Nice.
But of course, all the guys made fun of me for wearing a pink tux.
I know. You're like, it's
which
not
it wasn't.
Pink, it's peach.
Exactly.
Right. You guys don't understand.
That's
the
a great playground point to make. Peach. It was peach, man. It wasn't pink.
And it looked great with Regina's dress.
Of course it did. Absolutely. It was perfect. No, I think you were probably the best
dressed guy. The important thing is that she was happy.
With the best of my knowledge.
Great.
Well, let's call her now. In fact, we have Regina's number, and we'd like to call her on air.
Yeah, well, she's married with kids, and I'm not, so there you go. You know, who got the better end of that deal?
Hey, well, look, you're here. You're in a studio with us. So.
That's right. Well,
and thank you for having us, by the way. It's awfully nice of you to have us here.
Well, I'm glad you were able to come in, and I know you just drove in from Louisville, right?
We did, through the storms,
It was pretty rowdy out there on the highway.
Pretty wild, yeah.
Yeah, Eric, your hair is a mess, from all the winds.
Folks on the radio may not realize that's a bald joke.
That is a bald joke from one baldy to another. Well, I printed out an article yesterday, and I forgot to bring it off of my desk, in which, Eric, you were writing in for your former rag, yeah, called the Washington Post.
That little known newspaper. Yeah, I was. I was a writer about the local music and art scene for a number of years for the Post.
And this was an article on your experience of looking forward to, but ultimately not winning the Grammy.
Yeah, and that was... It was nice. They asked me to write a little something for the paper, just an insider's view of what it might be. And it turned out kind of an odd time. You know, Whitney Houston had died and the day before the Grammys right there in L.A., and everybody was kind of whispering amongst themselves about that very sad moment. And we were there with a whole lot of people that we knew who had flown in from Nashville also. And Peter's a writer for the Nashville Tennessean, the newspaper there. He's a music writer and columnist. So he knows most of the musicians there that get nominated for Grammy. So he's flying out there with Emmylou Harris and Alison Krauss on the plane. And it's pretty cool to be part of that. It was, just in case anybody's wondering, it was the first time we were either of us nominated for something like that. And
I like the way you said the first time.
Yes. Well, try. I have, in my mind, I've sort of reconciled myself to thinking that it's probably the only time that's going to happen. But whenever I say that out loud, people go, oh, no, don't say that. Of course he'll be nominated again. But
hey, we'll always have champagne, though.
That's right. Yeah.
And we should say that the thing you were nominated for was this CD that I'm holding in my hand. I Love Tom T. Hall's Songs of Fox Hollow.
Yes.
It was nominated in the children's album category, best children's album. It was one of five nominees. And it was a record I put out on my label, which is Red Beat Records. And it was a notion that Peter had a few years back.
Yeah, when I was a kid, there was an album by Tom T. Hall called Songs of Fox Hollow. And it had Sneaky Snake and I Love and I Care on it. And it had a couple of number one country hits. But it was something that I could listen to with my whole family, dad and granddad, and everybody enjoyed that album. Crazy Uncle Milton, even, I think. But when I found out that my wife was pregnant purportedly with our child, I started thinking about what I wanted the kid to listen to first. She was worried about, you know, well, how are we going to do the nursery and all that? You know, how are we going to pay for this kid and all that? And I thought, oh, what music's he going to listen to? And I thought, the first thing I want this kid to hear is Tom T. Hall's I Love. And then I started thinking that album needs to come back into the popular conversation a little bit. So we brought my then 10-week-old child along with Buddy Miller and Patty Griffin and Bobby Bear and Dwayne Eddy and Jim Lauderdale and a bunch of great folks over to Tom T. Hall's house. He has a studio there, and we recut that original album. We made a new version of it while he was sitting there watching and listening to us. And so it's if anyone out there has kids but does not enjoy maybe all of the children's music selections,
you're not
going to
mention like the Wiggles or anything.
No,
like that,
I wouldn't mention any of that. But it's a album that kids can enjoy and adults can enjoy and not run from the house screaming or anything like that.
Yeah. I haven't seen your playlist for today's show. Did you happen to plan on doing anything from it today?
We can. We're here for your amusement.
Well, I would be amused and furthermore touched, although... So you said a baby did come out of that.
Yes.
So to speak.
I was a little disturbed by the purportedly with our child.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was your child.
I have yet to do the blood test, actually.
I'm
Peter, yeah. Cooper, just own up.
He's my
Baker is your boy.
He is my boy. He's a good boy.
So what are you going to sing for Baker? And
well, you want to do a little young snake?
Sure. Let's do Sneaky Snake.
On the record, this is sung by Mr. Buddy Miller, and the guitar solo, the Sneaky Snake-ish guitar solo, is played by Mr. Dwayne Eddy himself, the Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, the great instrumental guitarist.
The first instrumental hero of rock and roll, solo instrumental hero, and so you'll be playing his part today, Eric, and I'll be singing like Buddy Miller. And we'll see how it goes. This is a song. Tom T. wrote the whole album when he had a couple of kids visiting him one summer, and they would ask questions about what all was going on his farm. And so he would write about the things on the farm. And this, I'm pretty sure he wrote after the kids wondered why the beer kept disappearing from the fridge so often. I'm not positive about that, but that's what I think. Boys and girls, take warning. If you go near the lake, keep your eyes wide open and look for a sneaky snake. Maybe you won't see him, maybe you won't hear, but he'll sneak up behind you, drink all of your root beer, and then sneaky snake goes dancing, wiggling and a hissing. Sneaky snake goes dancing, giggling and a kissing. I don't like old sneaky snake, he laughs too much, you see. He goes wiggling through the grass, tickles his just like a stick. He doesn't have any arms or legs, and you cannot see his ears. While we are not looking, he's stealing all of our beers. And then sneaky snake, he goes dancing, wiggling and a hissing. Sneaky snake goes dancing, giggling and a kissing. I don't like old sneaky snake, he laughs too much, you see. He goes wiggling through the grass, tickles his underneath.
Sneaky Snake by Tom T. Hall, as sung by Peter Cooper, and as played on the guitar, well, I should say that in the background was also singing Eric Brace, and both of them on the guitar, Eric Brace on the guitar solo. Here live in our studio on Live and Local, they're going to be performing tonight at a house concert on the Sandwich Life House Concerts, to be specific, the home of Ernie Blackwelder and Cynthia Vocal in Champaign. Somewhere in Champaign, you can get information on these concerts by going to thesandwichlife.com. You can get lots of other things on there too, Cynthia's blog and other things. There's also The Sandwich Life on Facebook, which is really how you get info. And if you want to get tickets to the concert, you email thesandwichlife@gmail.com or call 217-722-3432. I can't tell you where the concert is because I don't know where the concert is, and I think it's by design. You only get to know if you plan to go.
You want to get to know, right. You got to pay the dough.
And there's a potluck dinner involved. And
you don't even know what that is.
We don't know
it's
what
potluck.
That is.
Everything is based on ignorance here.
That's right.
How about that? Except you now know who's going to be playing the concert.
Oh, that's true. We gave that away.
You gave that part away. So we mentioned, Eric, that you're a former professional journalist and still occasional journalist, and that Peter is still a journalist. And also, I looked it up. It said in the publicity, professor, but you're in fact lecturer.
I hate that. Right. I hate that he got that job. He makes me call him professor.
At Vanderbilt. Well,
That's
he
right.
should.
That's right.
He should. He's got the hair.
That's true, too.
So... Yeah, so
it's good. Vanderbilt has very exacting standards for admission.
Clearly,
and I think it's kind of neat that I asked the kids if they thought it was a bit ironic that I would not be qualified to attend Vanderbilt, but instead am qualified to teach there.
And what do you teach there?
I teach the history of country music.
And how does that go over?
It's really boring. They don't like it at all. No, it goes over great. It goes over great.
It's one of those big lecture
halls. It's a bully pulpit for me. Yeah, it's a big lecture hall. There's 200 students there, and I get to tell them what I think about music. And so it's a nice release for me, and we all get to listen to great stuff. And I tell them stories about a lot of the people that they're learning about. It's kind of cool because country music history is a fairly recent history, and at least if we deal with commercial country music. And so,
recent means?
Well, from the 20s on. And so if we're studying Johnny Cash, I've had the good fortune to get to know a lot of the people that they study about, so I can give them firsthand. I can tell them what Johnny Cash was like and what Kris Kristofferson's like and things like that. And so they're, an American history professor, great though they may be, will not be telling you firsthand stories about George Washington. So I think it gives a little perspective that's interesting for the kids. And if not, it's a pretty easy C.
But George Washington wasn't playing country music.
No. He wasn't.
As far as we know.
But not commercial country music, but he may have been sitting around strumming for all we know.
Sure, we don't know.
Could be somewhere in the continuum.
And do you perform in your class?
No.
Or do you bring performers in your class?
I do bring performers sometimes into the class. Yeah, we have we've had Dierks Bentley, who's a big country hit performer, and Don Schlitz, who just got inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame. A lot of neat folks.
I'm guessing this class fills up pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's already full for next semester.
I wonder how many universities offer a class in country music that aren't in Nashville.
I'm not sure.
That's a good question. Well, there's the Blair School of Music. So we have another friend of ours, Jen Gunderman, who plays keyboards, who toured with the Jayhawks and toured with my band Last Train Home. And she's a professor of popular music history through the Blair School of Music at Vanderbilt. It's a pretty rigorous music education school for musicians who can learn performance and composition and music education at the Blair School. But it also gives a good overview, and a lot of the undergrads from Vanderbilt take them as electives, as cultural and sort of liberal arts electives. But what I like about that, I read a lot of books about music history anyway. You can just learn a lot about the history of the country and about the history of the people of the country and the history of immigration and the history of internal migration through music. You follow the musical paths, the story of how Cajun music came to be or how the accordion came into the U.S. or how recorded.
And how we can get it out.
Yeah, come on now.
Not Cajun music, just the accordion.
Gives me a chance to say we're going to have an accordionist on Monday's show.
Yeah,
there you go.
No kidding.
True.
Yeah, not kidding.
We actually love the accordion, and Jen Gunderman actually plays accordion
on
our album.
She does play accordion
on our big accordion fans.
But I just think it's a cool thing. It's I guess the history of anything is what you make of it, but you can go as deep as you want into the history of the design of pencils. You could probably get an entire history of the country out of that, too.
Maybe. I don't think you could fill up a 200-person class with
No, I don't think so either.
No, but I bet you could get somebody to come.
Yeah, yeah.
If they thought they'd get an easy seat.
Well, some people have a passion for pencils, and that's just the way it is.
Here is the most burning question I have about country music, right?
I got your answer. I don't even know what you're going to ask. I'm ready, though.
Okay, all right. You can probably answer this question. How many of, and you don't have to have a number or even a percentage, but how many of the country artists actually speak country, meaning with the drawl? And the reason I ask this question is twofold. One is that it all tends to be the same drawl. It doesn't come from any particular part of the country except Nashville. And the other thing is we add, I'm frankly, probably, is just as well forgetting the name of this one particular country artist who did come in here and play live. And when I called to confirm, he picked up the phone and said hello in what I would say is the normal way.
Right.
As soon as I said who I was, bang, in came the drawl.
Yeah. So, well, I mean, I think everybody has an affect. These are not our actual voices either.
Yeah.
If we were to speak like we normally do around the house, it would sound pretty silly indeed. But no, I there are some folks who have a genuine Southern accent. There are also some painted-on accents that I've heard. And there is a place that a certain male country vocal accent comes from, and it comes from Lefty Frizzell by way of Merle Haggard. and they're doing kind of a haggard imitation. And it's when they sing and talk like this.
Oh, yeah.
They have that little bit of air right up there. And that's all from Lefty Frizzell. And that's a good way to sing if you want to sell some records and be called traditional country music.
As long as you're wearing the hat.
Yeah, it helps to have a hat. But so are you questioning authenticity? Is that root of your inquiry?
I am. Yes, I am. That
authenticity is a tricky thing.
Yeah.
And I think there's some people who paint on their accents and some who don't. I don't think the accents are necessary. Don Williams didn't have any particular drawl, and he just had a catalog full of great songs sung beautifully and played impeccably by world-class musicians. You can do it that way, too.
Well, speaking of, we got you both here, so why don't we have another one? Your choice this time.
All right, I want to sing a little song, for you.
Let's do one. We'll put the capo on third fret.
If you're playing along at home, yeah, capo three.
This is a song that we put on our Master Sessions record, and as you pointed out, that record includes Mr. Mike Aldridge, who was a founding member of the great bluegrass band from D.C., The Seldom Seen, and I used to go see them at the Birchmere Club up in Alexander, Virginia.
Hey, so did I.
I know, isn't that crazy?
We didn't even know each other. We were probably in the same audience.
And they used to play every Thursday night at the Birchmere, and they always sung this song. They always sung this song.
This was they're kind of their biggest hit. And we actually did have a country star on the recorded version of this because we wanted a third vocal part. And Eric and I were thinking, well, who's a big Seldom Seen fan and could sing the third part? Because Mike Aldridge from the Seldom Seen was actually playing dobro with us, and he wanted to play dobro and not sing. So I said the biggest Seldom Seen fan I know in Nashville is Kenny Chesney, who's sold 60 zillion records and fills up football stadiums. And I guess I texted him.
You
and
did, yeah.
2 minutes later, yeah, I'd love to sing on that. That's one of my favorite songs. Tell me when. So Kenny, he talks like a normal person from East Tennessee talks.
Yeah.
He doesn't paint on his accent.
So this is called Wait a Minute, and it's written by Mr. Herb Peterson.
Once again.
Did I hear you say you're going far away again? Try to change it. I can't take the lonely nights without your love. Wait a minute. Did I hear you say you're going far away again? Try to change it. I can't take the lonely nights without your love.
Did he take that high on purpose today?
It's how you get on up there when you're
boy. I'm usually sing that at night and not in
yeah,
the relative
no, it's
morning.
Funny, the relative morning.
Now we've had many singers come in here and complain. This show is just too early.
Yeah. We'll fix it
even
in the mix,
at noon. Yeah,
it's a good thing this isn't live.
Oh wait,
Eric Brace and Peter Cooper live on Live and Local right here in our
goodness.
Studio. At the Illinois Public Media Building at Campbell Hall. They are going to be playing a house concert tonight in Champaign, which you could go and see and even get a potluck dinner out of it as well. It's called the Sandwich Life Concerts. I go for more information to thesandwichlife.com to get admission and information on where and how and so on. It's thesandwichlife@gmail.com, and you can even find out what's for dinner.
Yeah, more than sandwiches, I think.
I think so. Well, I know they were doing, I want to say last time they did a concert, they had some sort of cassoulet or something that sounded
wow.
awfully gourmet-ish to me.
All right. See, that's one of the great things about house concerts, and they have become more and more a part of our touring itinerary and other singer-songwriter types that we know, because clubs are just, they don't book as many of those kinds of acts, and the general audience for the world of singer-songwriters might be a little older and doesn't want to go out so late to a rock club or something. We love just wandering into the people's houses, these people who may not even know us as human beings. They might know our records, but they'll invite us into their house and feed us and put us up and have us sing in their living rooms. I mean, it's really an extraordinary
sometimes
phenomenon.
We just stay.
Yeah, we just stay there for a couple weeks.
Yeah.
They can't kick us out.
It takes a while for them to get the, cops involved.
But
it is fun, but we love playing clubs as well. We're coming back to play a big theater.
Yes, you are.
It's the Virginia.
The Virginia Theater with John Prine.
We get to open up for one of our heroes, Mr. Yeah. John Prine, on Friday, April 13th, I believe, is the date of that.
Friday the 13th.
That
oh, wow.
Lucky.
I hadn't thought of that. Yeah. Can you call John and tell him we can't got to cancel that?
John actually had an album called Lucky 13
hey, that's
at one
right.
point.
So. Well, maybe that's, yeah. Well, we'll be talking about that definitely closer, too. But, yeah, I just saw yesterday that you guys were doing that. So anybody who can't get into the house concert, you have a chance to come back and hear him again.
That'll be great.
Coming up in April. I do note here from Ernie and Cynthia, the people whose home you'll be playing at, they say, all are welcome, kids are free, wow. as are mothers with children under the age of 2.
All right.
Wow.
And
I
so,
guess we better plan on doing some of them
kids songs.
Yeah, well, I'm just giving you the warning there.
Wow.
The phone number, by the way, 217-722-3432. I want to come back to the music writing thing. Eric, you've done a lot of writing in the past. Peter, you're still writing. How did you get into that business? And Eric, what sent you away from it?
Well, it's I got into it because I was playing music, and I got a job writing for the Washington Post. It was really a lucky break. The person who had previously been covering the local nightlife and music scene of the Post had quit, and the editor of the weekend section knew me as a musician. I was playing in bands in Washington at the time in the mid 90s, and he asked me to write a couple of fill-in columns because big things were happening in the D.C. nightlife at the time. A couple of big clubs had opened, and they felt like they needed to weigh in, so I wrote a couple of columns about it. And he said, do you want to keep writing some more? And I said, sure. You know, I hadn't gone to journalism school. I hadn't paid my dues working at the San Jose Mercury News or something. I just stumbled right
into it. It's actually a pretty big paper, Eric.
Yep. Kind of stumbled right into it. And they So they let me stay there scribbling pretty much whatever I wanted for about 10 years. And I guess what was happening, I was still working. I had and still have a band called Last Train Home, and we were starting to develop a following up in the D.C. area. And I got a call out of the blue one day from a booking agent out in California saying, hey, you know, I've been hearing about you. I'd love to have a shot at booking you, and but I can only do it if you're willing to go full-time. And I said, I got a great job. I can't do that. And he said, well, I can't book you unless you're willing to hit the road. So I talked to my bandmates, and I had a quorum. Three out of five of them said, yeah, sure, we'll go. We'll go full-time. And we all quit our jobs and got in the van and drove around.
Does that mean the other two quit also, or did they have to go along with the vote?
No, they went, and it's funny now the band is kind of a three city kind of band. They're part timers who live still up in D.C. And when I go up and play there, they rejoin the band for a gig or two. And we have members in California and members in Pennsylvania and members in Texas and a lot in Nashville too. So we're all kind of far flung. It's a loose aggregation of musicians now, but. Lately, I've been doing more and more touring with Peter, and that's how I met him. When I was making records with Last Train Home, I would look at the list of music writers at newspapers around the country, and I would mail copies of our records to Peter, and every now and then he had written a couple of nice things about the band and reviewed them in the Tennessean. And so when we were touring the country, we started playing a bunch in Nashville, and it just began looking more and more appealing as a place to live. Washington was not terribly a music-centered town and was pretty expensive. And I thought, well, if I'm on the road all the time, I might as well live somewhere that is more sort of conducive to the musical life. And thus I found myself in Nashville, Tennessee. Plus, it's a lot closer to Champaign-Urbana than D.C.
Well, so that's a perk.
Absolutely. You know, I'm looking for all the reasons I can to move to that.
And ways to patronize the listening audience, too.
I wasn't saying that. It's geographically closer.
You are correct.
And Peter, how about your writing career? Was that right along with the music making?
I was making music before I was writing about music, but the writing about music took a precedent for a while. I started writing about music when I was in college, and a professor of mine was supposed to review a Guy Clark show, and he got pneumonia or something, wound up calling me, said, I'm sick, I can't review this show, and can you go review it? You're the only person in Spartanburg, South Carolina that knows who Guy Clark is. And so I said, sure, I'm 20 years old, I'll go and review a show by one of the masters of American songcraft and determine whether I think it's any good or not.
Some judgment, sure.
Went, reviewed it for a weekly magazine and got paid $25 for the review, and I thought that was cool. And they let me into the Guy Clark concert for free.
Yeah, that's the biggest perk.
So I started doing that. I started writing then about music for various weekly publications, and then I started teaching middle school. Did that for 4 years while I was writing about music, and finally someone from a newspaper called and asked if I wanted to come and if I would ever consider quitting my middle school teaching job.
Was this teaching music in middle school or just teaching
middle
school?
No, this was teaching like middle schoolers.
Everything.
Yeah.
And so you are qualified to teach at Vanderbilt.
No. But I did have a teaching license in South Carolina. You may notice South Carolina at the bottom of those lists of right next to Mississippi on those lists of where the schools are really good, right towards around 49. But I was asked if I wanted to quit middle school teaching and just write for a living. And after pondering it for 0.03 seconds, I said, yes, I will quit. And so did that for a while in South Carolina, and then got a job in Nashville writing about music in 2000, and was playing every now and again, but focusing on writing about it. And then wound up hanging out with a neighbor named Todd Snyder, who happens to be one of the best songwriters of his generation. And we would sit around and pick, and he would ask, after a while, he asked if I would come out and open some shows for him. This is maybe 7 years ago, something like that. And I said, well, sure, that sounds like fun. And then he said, well, if you're going to do that, you need to have something to sell or else you're going to lose a lot of money. So let's go in and record. And so, okay. And, you know, a month later, I found myself in the touring musician business. And since then, I've gone part-time at the paper and am out here just making loads of cash and sleeping in five-star hotels out on the road. It's just great.
I think he's making that last part up.
Maybe so. I am having a ball, though, and it's been a wonderful way to see the world and to hang around and play music and be around music. And I still write for the Tennessean as a part-time music columnist, and it's been fun.
Nice mixed life.
Yeah,
in
sure.
In that case. Well, I'll have to compare notes on Todd Snyder later. We had had a conversation with him some weeks ago, might even be a few months ago by now, before the show, which was interesting in various ways.
And, I can only imagine. I don't have to imagine.
Never quite sure what you're going to get, but the great Todd Snyder.
You're going to get a bunch of good songs from him.
Yeah,
at the
very least.
Yeah.
Peter Cooper and Eric Brace are going to be playing a Sandwich Life house concert tonight in Champaign. For more information, thesandwichlife@gmail.com, or go to thesandwichlife.com, or go to Facebook and look up The Sandwich Life, or phone 217-722-3432. Coming up shortly, I'll be talking with Charlotte Mattex Mersch, who is a harpsichordist and professor at the University of Illinois School of Music. She is also director of the early music ensemble called Concerto Urbano, and they are giving a concert Sunday on the U of I campus, and we'll be talking about that program. Well, let's have one more from Eric and Peter.
Sure.
What should it be?
What do you want? You want to do Grandma?
You want to do Grandma? Sure.
Sure.
Do that. It's a new song.
Yeah. This is
trying it out here?
It's brand new. I've been trying it out on the road a little bit and going in to record it next week. And wrote it after sitting next to John Prine on an airplane, actually. And after that conversation, got back to the hotel and started thinking. And this came out.
We'll see if anything rubbed off.
Yeah,
exactly.
Was a secret that she kept a long time, but she didn't take it to her grave. There was a trip she took to Pensacola when she was young and didn't have to behave. There was a man that she had long admired. There was something about his rugged good looks. She liked to watch him on the small screen and read about him in the comic books. She said it was the heat of the moment. She said it was the blush of youth. She said it was the smell of the sea air and the taste of the gin and the dry vermouth. She said it took about an hour, a couple inches of black and blue. Grandma's Batman tattoo. Close to her heart, a private work of art, underneath the wool and the flannel. Nobody could have guessed, there upon her chest, same bad time, same bad channel. Holy Toledo is something to see, but she always kept it hidden from view. Grandma's Batman tattoo. Grandma was a real good grandma. Grandma was a real good wife. She lived to stay at home, turn my stories on, squash casserole kind of a life. Grandma didn't stir up trouble, Grandma just stirred the stew. She didn't like to fly, she never told a lie, and she never made a hullabaloo. But there were nights she lay awake and wondered how come it turned out this way. What happened to the girl on the tilt-a-whirl by the beach that summer day? Sometimes she would look in the mirror. Sometimes she would stop and stare at herself and her favorite picture, both looking kind of worse for wear. Close to her heart, a private work of art, underneath the wool and the flannel. Nobody could have guessed, there upon her chest, same bad time, same bad channel. Holy Toledo is something to see, but she always kept it hidden from view. Grandma's Batman tattoo. It was a secret that she kept a long time, but she didn't take it to her grave.
There was a family trip to New Orleans, but she was old and didn't want to behave. Grandpa having gone for one long year, we thought that maybe it would cheer her up to take Grandma to the Mardi Gras and let her walk canal with a go-cup. Time has not erased the memory, though I'm a-hoping one day it recedes. She said it was the heat of the moment. She said she really wanted some beads. It was the moment that we all discovered what just the doctor and Grandpa knew. Grandma's Batman tattoo. Oh, Grandma's Batman tattoo.
Peter Cooper and Eric Brace. So is it just called Grandma?
Not sure what it's called yet. I'm trying to figure out if there's any copyright infringement issues. It may be called Grandma's Tattoo.
Well, that'd be a good one. Her bat. So this is true?
I don't want to, you know, talk too much about my personal life. You know, you've already made me talk about my kid and about my, you know, my job history. So I don't want to. Let's leave my grandmother out of this. Who brought her up anyway?
Damn it!
Oh, the song.
Song. Yeah, that's the thing about songs. Well, they may or may not be true, but
the media is always on the lookout for some kind of salacious.
It's our job.
Get the paparazzi out of the parking lot.
Yeah. They've been waiting for a while, and it's time for you guys to. Face the music out there.
Wow.
With the flashing flash bulbs and everything. There's no such thing as flash bulbs anymore.
I know. Isn't that funny?
Well,
I still.
And that's why it's so weird when they're following you with them and hopping off. Man, we're so happy to be here.
Kevin, thank you for having us.
Thank you. And we're looking forward to the Sandwich Life show tonight. If anybody out there thinks has not been to a house concert and finds that an odd notion of going into a stranger's house and eating some food and hearing a concert, it's actually. Less strange than going to a club and fighting for parking and doing all that. You just
really cool.
Wind up meeting a bunch of nice people and hearing some mediocre songs.
Hey,
I'm sorry.
And you get a home-cooked meal at this particular one as well. Go to thesandwichlife.com, email thesandwichlife@gmail.com, or phone area 217-722-3432. Eric and Peter, thank you very much for joining
us on
the show.
Thanks
for
having us.
Support for WYLL comes today in part from World Harvest International and Gourmet Foods on the corner of 6th and University in Champaign, providing Champaign-Urbana with an international selection of chocolates, cheeses, oils, balsamic vinegar, jams, spices, barbecue sauces, and more. World Harvest invites you to join them in supporting public radio. That was music by Elizabeth Jacquet de la Guerre, a performance by Ensemble Galilei, and the music Symphony and Musette from the Isle of Delos. Heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9, and played that music because hers will be among the not often heard music that you can hear in a concert on Sunday evening at 7:30 on the University of Illinois campus in Smith Music Hall, Smith Memorial Hall, in the Memorial Room, which is on the second floor. Lovely little room to hear music. And the director of Concerto Urbano, who will be featured in that concert, is Charlotte Mattex-Mersch. She's a professor at the University of Illinois, professor of harpsichord and early music, and she's with me in the studio right now. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So who was Elizabeth Jacquet de la Guerre, if I pronounced that somewhat correctly?
Yeah, she has a wonderful name.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Claude Jacquet de la Guerre, I think is the
whole thing. Oh, I missed
thing.
A name, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, she was very talented, in fact, a prodigy when she was young. Female composer, of course, from France. And this concert's featuring, the first half will feature sonatas, solo and trio sonatas for violin and continuo that she wrote. as well as a cantata, a biblical cantata entitled Esther. She apparently was such a prodigy at a young age that when she was just 6 or 7 years old, she entertained King Louis XIV for hours improvising preludes at the harpsichordist. So she was a composer and a very talented virtuoso harpsichord player. She wrote some beautiful harpsichord suites, which we won't be performing this time around, but we will be doing the instrumental and one vocal work.
So Concerto Urbano is kind of a loose conglomeration of students that you work with in the program at the UI?
Right. Of course, they sign up for ensembles. It varies from semester to semester. This particular term, I have some wonderful singers that I have worked with before in the operas, graduate students, and two harpsichordists, both my students, harpsichord majors, very talented as well, and two violinists who'll be playing our Baroque violins.
And you play on these concerts as well?
Sometimes I do. This time around, I'm not going to. I'm just coaching.
Fair enough. I mean, that's the student experience to
Absolutely.
Be able to actually get to play. And the other, there's another woman composer whose name I probably had heard before, but you certainly don't see either of these folks on programs anywhere near often enough. Barbara Strozzi.
Right.
About the same time period?
About the same time. She was, well, really, yeah, 17th century, about the same time, maybe a little bit earlier than Jacquet de la Guerre. But what Jacquet was to Paris, Strozzi was to Venice. She was a prolific, very talented composer, wrote for voice, mostly solo soprano, and wrote about 100 cantatas. It's said that she was possibly a courtesan. That can't be proved one way or the other, but she was a illegitimate daughter of a poet, Strozzi. So she mingled in very high, in sort of the intelligentsia, high circles of the day, would have been well educated, both in poetry and in singing and composition. She was a singer herself. So we'll be performing two cantatas of hers.
Including the one we're going to sample?
Right.
Which is called Lagrime Mie, which means
right.
Roughly what?
Tears, my tears. The text actually concerns love, as most of her cantatas do, and it starts out with an absolutely gorgeous recitative-like section that I think you'll be playing here. Tears of mine, why do you hold back? So it's a lament, and the use of dissonance in this opening line is extraordinary, stunningly beautiful. I think your listeners will hear that in just a moment.
And here's a soprano named Julianne Baird with harpsichordist Colin Tilney, music by Barbara Strozzi on Live and Local. This will be performed on Sunday night at 7:30 on the U of I campus by members of Concerto Urbano, hearing it on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Comes back into the refrain, Lagrime mie, my tears, why do you hold out? Quite a sad story here, a lover singing about his lover who has been imprisoned by her father. Because, alas, she gave me a look of compassion, her cruel father imprisoned her. The beautiful, innocent girl stands shut up between two walls where no ray of light can come through. Sad song by Barbara Strozzi and performed here by soprano Julianne Baird with harpsichordist Colin Tilney. Members of Concerto Urbano will perform that and music by Elizabeth Claude Jacquet de la Guerre on Sunday evening at 7:30. On the University of Illinois campus in Smith Memorial Hall. And who was the soprano who's going to be doing this? That one?
That one will be sung by Sam Ju Kim. In fact, all three of my sopranos are students of Cynthia Heyman Coleman, So I might just give a plug for Cynthia. Her singers are absolutely stunning. I'll also be having on the program Alba Cancel, who'll be singing Esther, and the French piece by Jacques Edlaguerre. And I'm trying to think, La Strato, another cantata by Barbara Strozzi, will be sung by Ju Young, also a student of Cynthia. Mm. All three have appeared in operas before, so some of your listening public may know them.
Yeah, and it sounds like it requires a substantial amount of interpretation to pull this one off.
In fact, it does, but that's been the joy and the challenge, I think, of coaching them. I think they're doing a phenomenal job, so I'm looking forward to this myself.
Yeah, well, it's a free concert. Charlotte Maddox Murch is director and coach for Concerto Urbano. They'll be at Smith Memorial Hall Sunday evening at 7:30. Thanks very much for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Our broadcast today is made possible with support from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana, with wines, beers, and spirits for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held on Saturdays from 3 to 6:30 p.m. in the Bouvon Wine Bar. More information is available at thecorkscrew.com. And you're listening to 90.9 WYL FM and HD Urbana with translators W266 AF Urbana and W293 AF Danville, NPR Classical Music, and more for Central Illinois. It's a minute past one.